Time for Message in the Bottle, brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan joining us in studio. Good day, sir. Fired up. Ed?
Sorry, I had to do that for Rich. Boy, yeah. Here's the thing. I have more respect for someone who's still out there and doing it.
Yes.
And yet at the same time, I don't want to be almost 90. Almost.
Almost. Not quite 90 yet. No.
Doing the tour stops in Eastport. That's why the man, he gets in the... I'm in Atlanta now.
But I don't think...
How would you know?
I don't think he needs to. I think he's.
I don't think he needs to, but
he wants to. It's who he is.
I take that. No, here's the thing, and I say
he doesn't need. He doesn't need the money.
He doesn't need the money. Over the weekend, my wife and I went to see Bobby McFerrin, and I do not mean this to sound like I'm ripping on him. He's lost a step or two, but it was still transcendental, mm-hmm. right? I grew up with him. I remember Casey's top 10 videos and Don't Worry, Be Happy yes. coming out. And I got that album and I know every song by heart, and I got into acapella, no doubt, partially at least because of that. Christine and I saw him, in Princeton, probably about 20 years ago, right around the time we first got together. We went to see Blair Witch Project. When we were first romancing each other, and it scared us at the time before we sort of looked back and we're like, yeah. And we listened to, and I couldn't possibly make this up. We needed to feel better about ourselves. So we listened to Limp Bizkit, Nookie, and then Don't Worry, Be Happy from Bobby McFerrin. I'm like, honey, I got I don't even think I called her honey at the time. Right. Like Christine, I've got the perfect song. Like, let's throw this in, and and that's the thing is you don't, and somebody at the Q&A afterwards, why, how often do you sing? Whatever. He's like, I sing every day. I have to sing. I always knew I was going to sing. And it's the most beautiful thing in the world when it worked for them. I'm glad it worked for them. Which gets me into something. I want to talk about wine, but I just wanted to as a football commentator, as someone who talks about young people. And I this brings me back to those early days when I met Christine, right? I was a college student, but I was still earning money off of professional efforts that I did, and no one came in and took away my amateur status, right? I'm curious about your take about what's going on in California. There's no doubt that Maine black bears could be paid and would be paid probably for their likeness by people like Corker Varney, or or Family Dog or something like that. That's hey, the official blah 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 of the black bears, and we pay these. What's your take on this?
Yes,
I've been amused that I've seen so many no's. It's gonna ruin amateur sports. I'm like, is it?
No, people are making money off them, because I think of this, and with somebody, Maine either played or was going to play last year, and it was a kicker. I think it was the game we didn't play with Central Florida, but I believe they had a kicker who was doing YouTube videos and was making a ton of money, and the NCAA declared him ineligible.
Yeah, it's madness.
If he were doing anything else,
and literally anything else,
if you were in college and you were a tremendous singer, guitar player. Yeah. Magician, you name it, and you could be a carpenter, and you could make money on it. No one would say a word. They would applaud you for your industriousness.
It's the strangest thing, and I guess they're pointing out that colleges are giving scholarships. I'm like, I knew a lot of people are on music scholarships and things like that. I mean, what are you talking about?
Right.
Very strange. Anyway, I was pleased to see California. For anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, by the way, California.
And I think Florida has done the same thing.
Theirs is still in the system, but they're pushing for almost immediately.
Yeah.
California's doesn't take effect until 2023. Florida's, I think, is 2020. It's as soon as it passes, it'll basically be a thing. But yeah, folks, this is really interesting. It's sort of shaping young people's lives. It behooves you to pay attention, right? California just passed a law. The governor signed it off that starting in 2023, college athletes there can make money off their likeness, which, again, you know, as a former musician, and this is what I'm saying, like I made money in college off of being a musician. No one threatened to kick me out of college, and you know, I couldn't be a music major anymore because of it. So I just find it very, very interesting.
Yeah.
So anyway, America, we're talking about, we're getting back to wine. We finished talking about California, so I want to take this month to sort of finish up on the rest of the United States of America in terms of wine production. There is just so much going on. We will focus on Oregon and Washington, which are the two other, I would say, big players in America in the next 2 weeks. But what's very amusing is, even as I say that, as I was doing research and prep for the show today, 89% of all wine made in the U.S. is made in California, right? So even though I'm going to take a week each to talk about Oregon and Washington, 89% of the wine made in the U.S. is made in California. Now, let's talk further about that. What does that mean in terms of the world? Well, America is the fourth... I'm sorry, and I'm going to keep saying America. I'm terrible about this. I should really bear in mind. The USA is the fourth largest wine-producing nation after Italy, Spain, and France, which means California is basically the fourth largest wine-producing nation. And bear in mind, they do have an enormous economy. And also, quickly, just to throw this in, bear in mind, grapes are second after marijuana as in terms of most profitable plant in California. This is a funny one, and I will open this up to Carrie and Rich. We are the sixth most densely planted country in terms of vines. Can you guess? I'm sure you can guess that France, Italy, and Spain are the top three. Can you guess the other two besides the U.S. that's in the top six?
I will go with Argentina.
No.
Australia?
No. I'll bet one of them might be fairly obvious based on some of the things I've said on the nation about the Southeast Asian consumption of wine. China.
Oh, okay.
But the other one, Turkey.
Turkey, now that I would not have guessed.
Very interesting. So, and this is just, folks, by way of saying that all 50 states make wine, every one of them. Wyoming has three wineries, and that's the least. And California produces 89% of our wines, and we're the fourth largest producer of wine. So, again, just bear in mind how staggering that is for their agricultural sector, economy, etc. And a non-political adjunct to this, by the way, who do you think picks a lot of those grapes? They're not middle-class white people.
I don't think they would be.
Just throwing that out. America, the U.S., and America as a whole has been a huge wine-producing nation forever, but more than that, we are a huge grape-growing nation. It's important to remember that the Vikings came over and started to dub this place Vinland, right? Grapes growing everywhere. Problem is that the grapes weren't very good to drink when you made them into wine, though Lord knows people did try. But obviously, the grapes that were here, like the Vitis Lambrusca, which some of you have had, that's the Concord grape and things like that. You can make stuff out of them. But basically, the vinifera was brought over from Europe. And as I've mentioned before, early efforts on the East Coast to plant that Vitis vinifera met with very sad results because the phylloxera louse ate them all.
Stupid louse.
But obviously, of course, eventually they did figure out that by grafting vines onto California rootstock and things like that, that it would be better off and survive in some of those, especially mid-Atlantic climates like Virginia, New Jersey, places like that, where they were trying to plant these Bordelaise-style varieties. And of course, again, it's one of my favorite little jokes that, of course, most of Europe is planted and grafted on North American rootstock as well. Because, again, we did happen to export the phylloxera louse to them. Sorry about that. Other fun things about America that I kind of want to mention. First of all, the very amusing thing is up in these colder climates, and of course, a lot of America is colder climate, there's a lot of interesting research being done. Grapes being created. In fact, the wine that we're going to drink today is some hybrid grapes that were grown at Savage Oak Winery. But there's a lot of promising expansion more in these northerly climes where we have limited ripening seasons than actually in a lot of other places where you think it might be easier to perhaps to ripen grapes, but the land isn't right. The terroir isn't exactly as you'd want. Whereas in northeast, New England and upstate New York, things like that, you really do have conditions that mirror a lot of the great vineyard sites of other places. So it's kind of interesting. Kind of fun also to remember the first commercially successful wine from North America was Piscataqua from Ohio. It's a joke now, but it's a sparkling, light sort of rosé, sweet thing. You can still find it in places, but not a lot. But very, very amusing. Again, sort of, it's important to remember how North America grew. And so the people that wanted the booze, they were immigrants from certain places. So very often immigrants from places that specialized in wine tried to recreate what they had in their homelands. Whereas people who came from places where there was a much more of a like a beer culture or a cider culture definitely invested in things like that. As I was mentioning, the Long Island Mid-Atlantic region has a very sort of Bordelaise-style climate, and you're really seeing a lot of excellent plantings there. I'm hoping by the end of this month to have a really nice Long Island wine to try on air. You're starting to see some of those entering Maine, which is really, really cool because that's probably the most commercially successful area that we're seeing that sort of thing done. And then, of course, the Finger Lakes region, which we may cover later this month, depending on what I do source from Long Island. But, of course, excellent Germanic-style wines being grown there. The wine we're drinking tonight is from Maine. Maine definitely grows these hybrid grapes, right? These grapes that were sort of crossbred in universities mostly to survive, to have early ripening, to have thicker skins, to survive the colder climates. We're drinking a cross right now. We're having La Crosse and Saint-Papin. La Crosse and Saint-Papin were both actually created by the same guy, and a guy named Elmer Swenson around 1970. This was made in Wisconsin, I believe, is where he was creating this. These are grown on the Savage Oaks estate, and they're made into this wonderful lightly sweet white wine called Entwined, which I think is absolutely divine.
Sure is.
And they make a lot of really, really nice wines. And if you're curious about how the viticulture scene is in New England and the Northeast, go there because they grow grapes and then they make wine out of them. And they know the whole deal, which is really cool because not everybody can say that. Before I run out of time, our tasting is on the 17th this month from 5 to 7 p.m. We are going to be hosting my good friend Jason Sheridan from South Portland Wine Company. We are going to be tasting some really, really cool wines, including, speaking of Germanic varietals, a Scheurebe, which is in itself a hybrid varietal created for Germany. And it is divine. So I invite you, 17th from 5 to 7, to come to Bangor Wine. Stay tuned for events for our anniversary, and I'll see you next week.
Thank you, Eric.